Turn your tax refund into a new garage door at Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Increase your home's value with a new Ideal garage door. From traditional to modern, Menards has a garage door to enhance your home's appearance. Choose from our large in-stock selection or design your own using our free garage door design program. Check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gau Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Quick word here for Bud Light. Bud Light has long time sponsored my radio shows here in Houston. We can't say enough about Bud Light helping bring radio and soccer talk together here in Houston, Texas. So our thanks to Bud Light as usual. And again, Bud Light reminds you to get down to the beautiful BBVA Compass Stadium. Take in all the international soccer, including, well, in June, the Copa Centenario will be right here in Houston, Texas. Can you imagine that? In Houston. BBVA Compass Stadium, that's where Bud Light would like you to go to watch games with like-minded individuals. Dynamo Dash. You may have been somebody who saw the Argentina and Lionel Messi game. With that, tonight, we take a little bit of a trip back in Houston soccer history. Now, I've reminded people once in a while on this show, it dates back to the late 60s with the Houston Hurricanes. I make that the Houston Stars. 70s, the Houston Hurricanes. The 80s, the Houston Dynamos. And then in the 90s, it was the indoor game with the Houston Hotshots before we, thankfully, got the return of professional soccer in form of the Houston Dynamo in 2006. One of the owners of the team, back in 1984, and for full disclosure here, I played on that team. He was my boss then. He is John Gawney. He joins us now. John, thank you very much for coming on the program.
You're welcome, Glenn.
All right, so let's, first of all, you and Pete Kane were the two owners. Were you two guys insane back then to be investing in the sport of soccer? Because you knew there was no return.
Yeah, well, we were sane, I hope, and but there was a little insanity around our love of the sport, and so we both went into this, I believe, very eyes wide open, and it really was for us as much a love of the sport as it was an awareness for what I believe were the budding fans of the future.
Pete Kane and you, just take us a little bit into what you two guys were doing from a business perspective, because your businesses were thriving at the time.
Yeah, well, our businesses were thriving, and it gave us the opportunity to be able to invest in what we loved and what we really hoped would be a future for the sport. One of the things we did differently, I think, with the Dynamo was that we invested in our players, and we invested in the players to bring them here, not just for a season, but for the year. So we had the players, once the season ended, go out to the parks, go to schools, do a whole bunch of things that were for the public. And you could go on many a weekend to a city park, and you would see the Dynamo van and a whole bunch of players out there. And it was really an investment into the future of the sport for Pete and I. We loved it. We loved every moment of the exciting times and the people who believed in it and the people who came out and enjoyed our games, and bringing Pele to town created such a buzz. And just, you know, the heart and soul of the players that played for the sport in those days, it was really a wonderful thing to experience. It was a real privilege in my lifetime, Glenn.
When you look at where the sport has come now, both from the grassroots level to the adult level in Houston, straight on to the Houston Dynamo now with the stadium, and then just this change of sort of diversity and size of the city of Houston, Texas, and what a soccer city it is, do you got to pinch yourself? Because I do still.
Yes. Glenn, the sport's matured beautifully, and the job that the Houston Dynamo are doing today is a wonderful job. There's always room for improvement, always, and I think it's just spectacular. I met you out at their practice facility about 4 months ago, and in speaking with the coach of the team, I was laughing because the practice facility in the field was better than the league's fields we were playing on in those days. It's just absolutely wonderful where it's at. And I think the real winners are the future players, the fans. And there's a really great game being put out there.
Well, you knew about the FC Dallas youth program because your grandson, Zach, was involved with that. And I know you got a lot of feedback from him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He had it was incredible, the exposure they gave them. And his team was ranked 6th in the United States. And, just watching him and following him, of course, me being a soccer fan and he absolutely loving the game, it was wonderful to see how the Dallas team invested in these leagues and really were pulling these young men. Glenn, they were pulling men at 16, 17, and 18 years old over to the club.
Yeah,
and
no,
working
you,
them in the club, well,
yeah,
and giving them that kind of exposure on a pro level. I thought that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, many of them in the starting lineup this past weekend for the first round of the conference championship.
That's right.
But what you had told me is that he would mention to you a lot that he crossed paths with some of the name players. He knew the players on the team. He knew Oscar Perea. That to me says something because there's that cross-germination with the first team and the stars who all provide real possibility to young minds.
Oh, Glenn, it totally provides for all these young players, I'm next. It gives them tremendous opportunity and belief in themselves. They work harder if they play, if they do a good job, they have an opportunity too. Oh, I think it offers tremendous hope to our young players who are out there really loving this sport and putting their heart and soul into the game.
Yeah, you had told me that around the FC Dallas facility in Frisco that there'd be times where the youth players would cross the paths of the full-blown pros and the head coaches of the pro teams on many occasions. All right,
That's
so
right.
back in 84, 85, 86, a lot of exhibition games with foreign teams. When you brought a team like Sheffield United over here, what did you pay them? Because I just want to relate that to nowadays when we see the Barcelonas, the Chelseas, the Liverpools, the Manchester Uniteds in their tour of the Americas every summer.
Yeah, we paid them about, if I recall, somewhere around $15,000 to $16,000. And we paid, of course, some travel expenses. We didn't pay all of their travel. We contributed into a travel pool because they made a couple of stops in the States usually once, you know, we made the contacts. But it was in those days, you know, it was pretty inexpensive when you think of it. And, you know, what they provided for us, it was tremendous exposure.
Yeah, and by the way, they were in the first division then. There was no Premier League then. So Sheffield United at the time was a well-known team. And actually was a first division team. If I remember right, we played Phil Thompson was the former Liverpool captain, was a part of Sheffield United. And then you, with your Irish roots, you brought over a very Protestant Linfield and a very Catholic Glentoran.
Yes, I did.
From Ireland. Tell us about that and why you wanted them over here so badly.
Well, I you know, first of all, they were Irish, and I really felt a real kinship to I have many relatives still living in Ireland, and I just thought it would be another wonderful opportunity. I think the Irish played a really, really strong, hard game. Some might say they played a rather rough game, and I thought it would be a great exposure for our team and a great experience.
How difficult was it back then to get attention? Because if my memory serves me correct, the only time we ever got on the front of a newspaper in Houston, and there were two at the time, the Houston Post and Chronicle, was we got on the front of the Houston Post when we got into the USL Finals against Fort Lauderdale.
Yes.
So how difficult was it to try and get somebody to pay attention to the sport of soccer back then?
Oh, it was incredibly difficult. I had many, many, many business connections and other connections in the city of Houston. And it was a very difficult deal to break into the mentality of a basketball, football, baseball city. And to this day, the state of Texas may have one NCAA college football soccer program.
You got HBU, you got SMU, and then in the future, I think when it happens, we'll be Incarnate Word. But yeah, you're right, very few.
Well, very few, and I think that what you've seen over the years, and you did a beautiful recap of where it started to where it is today, it has been planting seeds and watering those seeds, and every couple of years you see it flower. It was very exciting to see the Dynamo as they came here and watch. I catch their games a lot on television now, and I love watching the crowds there. But it's going to take time, Glenn. The big three, as I call them, were very, very well established in our country, let alone in Texas, and then, of course, Houston. But I think Houston's diversification and the sophistication of the people who live here, I think, have provided quite an avenue. I still think there's a huge part of our Latino fan base that we really haven't broken that secret yet. Anytime you can book in any kind of Central American, South American, or team, and you can see the fans lining up in the parking lot, you and I have gone to some of those games, and I mean, they're absolutely so excited about it. How are we missing that market? I just don't understand it. But it's something that's going to be worked on. I assure you the organization knows that, because it's an incredible market to have. So I'm sure it eventually will happen.
John Gaughan joining us here tonight. John, listen, as always, you got my vote for the Houston Soccer Hall of Fame. Hopefully one day guys will start looking back at the guys who spent real money back at a time when there was no investment. Maybe one day you'll get some of those millions back. Thank you so much for coming on the program tonight. It was refreshing.
Glenn, thank you for all of what you have done for the sport. You have continually, over the years, invested in the future and the health of this sport. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us tonight, John. That's John Gaughan, okay. Former owner of the Houston Dynamos. We're going to take a break here, a quick break. It's going to be a 7-Up break. Back with more.
ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gao Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. A quick word here for one of our great sponsors, Bud Light. Bud Light reminds you to get over to HoustonDynamo.com. It's where you can get season tickets to the Houston Dynamo, the Houston Dash. And Bud Light reminds you also to get down to BBVA Compass Stadium, because there's so many events coming here in Houston in the future. We've got CONCACAF Women's Olympic qualifying coming up here in February. We've got probably not down at BBVA, but over at Energy. But we have more great soccer with the Copa Centenario coming to Houston, 3 games there as well. And then, of course, next year, the NCAA Men's College Cup here in 2016. So Bud Light reminds you, get down to BBVA Compass Stadium, be with like-minded individuals, and take in the game of soccer. Now, with that, there is incredible excitement in Columbus, Ohio, the Columbus Crew getting to the MLS Cup Final. The minute I saw that, I thought, well, who better to talk to than play-by-play man on television for the Columbus Crew? He's Dwight Burgess. He joins us now. Dwight, thank you very much for coming on the show. Let's just start with what the energy and excitement is like in the city of Columbus.
Well, I tell you what, first of all, it's great to be with you again, Glenn. And we got back in, flew a charter, and got back in right around 2:30 in the morning. And there was a crowd at the airport there waiting to greet the team, so many that a bunch were turned away by security because the airport was otherwise closed. And that's just a send-off. The game is officially sold out. Tickets are going for $400, $500, $600 on StubHub and other places like that. There were multiple local media outlets at the airport when we arrived last night. And certainly this is an Ohio State town. It always has been and it always will be. But to get that type of immediate reception following the game is pretty significant. And they're really kind of the talk of the town right now. And I think in that respect, it's great that the football team at Ohio State didn't make the Big Ten championship game this Saturday, because really the black and gold are number one on the list.
Boy, it is exciting. The Columbus Crew obviously will take on the Portland Timbers in the MLS Cup Final at Moffrey Stadium. I want to take you into a couple things here. I mean, this has been a remarkable turnaround for this organization. How much of this comes down to having local ownership?
I think that there is a very important part, but far more on the business side, you know, the soccer specific. Well, let me back up a step. When Anthony Precourt took over ownership of the team, he made a very significant change in operations. Prior to that time, everything had run through the president and general manager of the team. He separated the business side and the soccer side. He gave all of the soccer side to Greg Berhalter. He gave all of the business side to Andy Lochnane. Andy then reconstituted his staff with predominantly local people who had experience in the market. And I think it's shown in the business plan, and it's clearly shown with the attention to Greg Berhalter on the soccer side that it's worked very well. So I think that Anthony Precourt made a huge decision that has really played out well.
So the structure of the club obviously changed in a big way. On the business side, were any of those locals that were hired or were originally with the Crew, did any of them have a real affinity for the sport of soccer?
You know, it's a great question, and there's a real mix. There are some who have college playing backgrounds, young lady that we do a lot of internet stuff with now, you know, online web presence. She played at Ohio University, so she's come in. One of the guys in the communications department's a former player. So there is definitely a collection of people who have come in that have specific soccer backgrounds. And then really some of the management level people underneath Andy are people that have come in from other organizations that are either sports oriented or are local or both. So, yeah, I think he's been very savvy in those moves.
So there are a lot of locals involved that truly understand what the soccer community is about from top to bottom, I guess, youth all the way on up. Let's talk about Greg Berhalter, because what he has done is pretty remarkable here. He obviously has brought the vision on the soccer side and has been allowed to do it.
He has been. He's been given the keys to the kingdom, and he has taken them with the utmost respect. You and I talked a little bit about this on a prior program in the past, but Greg is incredibly methodical. He is very planned out. He manages every single detail, and he has a plan, and he is really good, Glenn, about staying focused on that plan. It doesn't matter if they gave up 5 goals in a loss midseason at Orlando or if they had just, you know, thumped Toronto on Toronto's home field. His approach after the game was always the same, almost Bill Belichick-like in that we're on to the next game. We're on to the next game. Never gets high, never gets low, very, very steady, believes in these players, and ultimately has tried to create a player-centric environment that the guys have responded to.
You know what really resonated with me? I remember a couple of years ago after the World Cup when Giancarlo Gonzalez had a wonderful World Cup for Costa Rica. And Greg Berhalter, I just happened to be out there doing a game on the day Greg Berhalter had the press conference before the game to talk about the sale of Gonzalez to Palermo. And I just thought he was brilliant in the way he positioned this as such a win-win for the Columbus Crew, whereas I think around the league other clubs would have, you know, it would have been a bit of a state of panic here. Now, I know there wasn't really a lot of other option than doing that, but he really, the way he verbalized it, the way he approached that press conference with the sale of Gonzalez, just, you know, it kind of not only was a positive in the short term, but he kind of was looking out into the future here, saying that this was good business and a good part of our club.
Absolutely. And it doesn't matter what your specific walk of life may be, but in his case, he's a soccer coach. And in order to get players to buy in, as you well know from your own experience, Glenn, you have to paint a picture that makes sense to them. Most people don't know that in the last round of call-ups, Columbus Crew SC had 9 players called up to various international teams. Harrison Offal, captain, when he went back home. This is a very interesting roster of guys that he's brought in that he has made understand that they come first, and if during their time at Columbus Crew SC they play at a level that allows them to have another opportunity that's in their own best interest, Greg will always support that. Greg has been very supportive of Will Trapp, you know, leaving for a period of time with the under-23s. He's been a very vocal promoter of Will to get in more time with the national team. So, I mean, that's just Greg lives and breathes what he says.
He's Dwight Burgess, TV play-by-play man, long time for the Columbus Crew. Also has done it at a number of different levels from a coaching perspective as well, the youth game, the college game. He's been around it. Dwight, let me take you a little bit forward here, and let's get into Kai Kamara here. And obviously, you know, it's funny. I was having a conversation with Eddie Robinson, game one of the year, which was in Houston. And the Crew obviously was on the short end, I think, of a 1-0 game or a 2-1 game. It was a while back, and I remember looking at Eddie Robinson and go, oh, man, hands down, 10 to 15 goals for Kai Kamara. Well, he blew that number out of the water with over 20. Talk about what he's meant to not only the Crew on the field, but this relationship he has with the fans, because he's a marketing dream as well.
He is. You know, people don't realize, or a lot of folks I don't think realize, that Kai Kamara actually began his MLS career in Columbus. And at that time came in as a very raw talent whose athleticism or his athletic tools had made him a very productive player in the college game, in the youth game, but he was very immature from a professional standpoint. Eventually moved on, as you know, bounced around the league a couple of times, but grew, learned, listened most importantly, and you know, cultivated that into an opportunity in Europe. When he came back late last year and was signed, though he wasn't able to play, it was really interesting to listen to him talking because he was saying all the right things. So then the question was going to be, will he follow up with those when he steps on the field? And what people who don't get to see Kai on a regular basis don't understand is his work ethic. He is not only the leading scorer, but he is the most likely player to win a defensive header off of a set piece, a corner kick, something like that. He is always back in the box defensively in those situations working. He is just as happy to make the run away from the ball to create opportunities for guys like Merrim and Finley. He scores with his feet. He scores with his head. So his combination of work rate, his attitude, and ultimately his maturity. He's grown up. He will tell you that. And he's not only engaged in this team, he's engaged in the community. He has his own nonprofit, developing school opportunities back home. So this is a young man who has taken the lessons presented to him, and he's made the most of it.
He's Dwight Burgess joining us here tonight. He knows the Crew up and down. All right, when people say it's a counterattacking style that the Columbus Crew has, or labels them a counterattacking team, is that fair?
I think it is to a certain degree. What they want to do is play out of the back and attack very quickly. They transform it. On paper, they start in a 4-2-3-1. I just say it's a version of a 4-5-1. When they get into the attack, it's really much more of a 3-4-3. So they like to get forward quickly. They don't mind playing out of the back. One of the reasons that Greg Berhalter brought Steve Clark in to play in goal is because of his technical proficiency with his feet. Now, they have exposed themselves at times when they're trying to play out of the back, when maybe it's better just to whack the thing and start anew. But they want to play out of the back. They want to play very quickly, change the point of attack, allow Federico Higuain to find the spaces to play to the speedy guys like Kamara and Finley and Merrim. But if they are unsuccessful, the minute they win the ball, they will look to counterattack. And I think what they learned in the regular season when they beat New York was that there are times when this team can be direct and can be very successful. So rather than trying to play through that forward press, if you will, of the Red Bulls, they began to go Highway 1 over it, and in doing so forced New York to turn and chase, forced Red Bull to play a full field, which New York really didn't want to do. So I think it's a combination of taking what's available to them. They'll play out of the back, but if they can get a turnover in transition, they will counterattack at pace.
Did the Crew learn something as well about their way of containing this game in some ways? I mean, obviously it got a little bit crazy at the end, but
yeah.
I mean, to be fair, the way they defended this New York team, which was the highest scoring team in Major League Soccer during the regular season,
yep.
This was a real success from a defensive standpoint.
In the playoffs, four games plus the 30 minutes of overtime with Montreal, they shut out Drogba, Piatti, and Wright Phillips. I mean, I think that says it all for a team that at the end of the regular season was among the top couple in goals scored, but was also among the top couple in goals allowed. Now, the numbers began to improve defensively late in the season, and I think they've gained confidence in the addition of Gaston Sauro late in the season. And boy, you've been around every bit as long as I have. To bring in a central defender and put him in the final month to 6 weeks of the regular season and say, have at it, is really a tricky thing to do. But Gaston has come in. Tyson Wahl has adapted beautifully. Tyson was called to play that first game against New York when they pitched the shutout. Mm-hmm. So it's all of those things coming together, but ultimately I think they really are confident now with their play defensively as a group.
It seems very maturing to me, but you, as someone with as extensive a youth background and coaching background that you have, there's still a lot of players in Major League Soccer that have to be coached, that have to be worked with, that can't come into training sessions and not get attention and be expected to thrive on their own sometimes. I mean, I think managers still have to teach, don't they?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's part of the reason why we've seen really mixed results when international coaches have come in. You mentioned earlier these four teams. Look at who coaches the final four teams in MLS this year. Former players, experienced coaches, and of course, Caleb Porter was known first and foremost at Akron for his ability to recruit. Because, you know, Will Trapp once told me that when he went on his visit to Akron, he left thinking that he was now Caleb Porter's best friend in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that ability to connect, that you, and you have that playing background and you understand the American mentality and what the league is about, I think is huge. And then you have the pedigree to step out on the field and actually demonstrate at times. You know, these guys are still connected, whether it's Oscar Perea or, you know, whether it's a Jay Heaps or Jesse Marsh. You know, these are guys who can still step on the field and have credibility from their own experience, and they understand the younger players' mentality and what this generation wants. And this generation needs to be engaged. They will ask you why, and they're not questioning. They just want to understand the why behind do this, do that. They're not the infantrymen that you can just point in a direction and have them go. They want to be engaged in that process. And I think that some of these former players who are now becoming head coaches understand that.
Yeah, it's exciting to see the new sort of breed of coach coming in. And these are all guys that can still get in there and demonstrate as well.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any question. Before I let you go, Dwight.
All right. Sure.
Obviously, we talked about the pace of the Columbus Crew, but you're coming up against a team in the Portland Timbers that's got a boatload of pace as well. We can talk Alvis Powell. We can talk Darlington Nagbe. We can talk a number of players, Rodney Wallace. They have a tremendous amount of pace as well. So how do you see this matching up here this weekend?
I think it's going to be a track meet. I think you're 100% right. They played at Moffray Stadium during the regular season, and it was one of the few losses at home that Columbus had. Now, this was during a time when I think they were still really subject to a couple of bad mistakes defensively per game, and Portland, with their attacking talent, took advantage. But it had a lot of end-to-end, a lot of speed. I think everybody's been waiting all season long. When is the Portland offense going to finally engage? Wasn't for a lack of opportunities. In fact, they were one of the better teams in the league at creating chances. They just weren't consistently finishing. Well, they found that rhythm finally. They've carried it forward. And you know what? I think this could be one of those 4-3 games. I think it's going to be up and down. I think there's going to be a lot of offensive opportunities. And while obviously I have a personal rooting interest, at the end of the day, I think it would be great for the spectators to see a high-energy attacking game that has several goals in it.
I think it's going to be exciting. And the move of Caleb Porter to move Darlington Nagbe into a higher position there has brought the best out of Fernando Adi as well. I mean, his last 5 weeks, he's looked a much better player in Major League Soccer. Well, look, Dwight, this is going to be a beauty. I love the final, Portland-Columbus. I know people are, oh, there's no New York, no L.A. Who cares? This is a great final.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Just my second one in 20 years, so I'm going to enjoy every bit of the week. And it's an exciting time here in Columbus.
Well, it's a great time for you as well. You're a Columbus treasure. Thank you very much for coming on the program.
Absolutely, Glenn. All the best.
All right. He's Dwight Burgess, play-by-play man on TV. Long time in the Columbus community in a variety of capacities. The Crew will take on the Portland Timbers this weekend for the MLS Cup Championship. I love it. We'll take a break.
I'll wear you like a stitch. Yeah, I'm the one who's hurt. Pay attention to your twisted
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gau Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. Time to bring on the former Premier League player, and of course, you catch him a lot on NBC, pretty much week in and week out with the Premier League coverage. He is Robbie Earle. He joins us now. Robbie, thank you very much, as always, for coming on the program.
Pleasure, Glenn. Pleasure, mate.
Well, let's whip through a couple of topics here in the Premier League right now. Has the league, in your mind, because you follow it so closely, you've been doing this a number of years now, you played in this league, has it become more interesting to you that specific things have happened? Let's say, you know, there's maybe not the dominance there once was by specific clubs. You've got Everton standing up to big money Chelsea and not trading one of their star players, and John Stones, who's a future prospect. Are all these things, you know, Bournemouth coming into the league, are all these things kind of making the Premier League even more interesting?
I think it is, Glenn. I think every weekend we're getting big storylines, big dramas, you know, headlines. And one of the things that I think has happened over the last maybe 2 or 3 years is that the league, let's take out the top 4 or 5 teams, will always be strong, will always spend money. But I think the league everywhere else, it has picked up in terms of its quality. So you no longer got games where the top teams are going to go somewhere middle or bottom and guarantee 3 points. We've got teams like West Ham now spent well, have got a good team. Everton look exciting this time around. Swansea, though they've had a little bit of a bad run, started well. Stoke City, Crystal Palace. There's a number of teams now who've invested because of the money that's involved in the Premier League now, because of the TV deals that are putting so much finance back into football clubs. I think they're getting stronger. I think they're getting better. And I think teams coming up are doing everything they can to make sure they stay in there because the riches is so big now being in the Premier League.
Robbie, to you, you know, big money, stars. I mean, this is entertainment. This is Showtime. Yeah. This is all those things.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when we go back to before the forming of the Premier League, which I believe was 1992, you know, there is this tremendous provincial history with these clubs. I mean, remarkable, which I'm sure that people that have adopted this only in the Premier League era maybe aren't even that connected to, and maybe it doesn't even matter. But how much is the provincial side of it, that history? Do you still sense that in stadiums everywhere now?
I do, and I think it's growing more and more. And I know we'll talk a little bit about MLS later on, and that's probably something that you know the American clubs can look at in England in the Premier League and look at how they can grow their clubs and the affinities to communities because it's such a big thing now. It's such a global attraction, a football club. It's historically been in places for hundreds of years supported by generations of families. And I think, you know, the appeal for the league is getting stronger. We've seen it in numbers at NBC, you know, record numbers now for games at you know, 7:30 on a Saturday morning, we're getting, you know, 1.5 to 2 million people viewing in because people now want to be part of it. It's like people want an affinity to a club, and once they've got that affinity and that brand loyalty, you know, they'll do whatever they can to support teams. So, yeah, the demand for the sport continues to grow. The stars get bigger. The storylines get bigger, and, you know, long may it continue.
Jamie Vardy, Leicester, is an amazing story. Yeah. Let's start with Vardy himself, who, you know, for many people, came out of nowhere. He was ninth tier in England. Now he's an English international. He's got 14 goals. He has scored a record 11 successive matches in the Premier League. Speak to me about him. What makes him a dangerous striker and why maybe it took so long for him to really hit pay dirt?
Well, the other side of the game that I think is fascinating as well, and this has nothing to do with money. This is a player who 5 years ago, Glenn, was playing in the fifth tier, so like the conference level of football. So it's almost like non-league. 5 years later, he scored 14 goals to lead the lead, scored in 11 straight games. He's the hottest striker in the business. And really, he's had this sort of opportunity where he's continued to work hard. He plays with this enthusiasm, this never-say-die attitude. He chases down defenders. most of his goals come off his running ability to run in behind back fours, as his 11th goal in 11 successive games came against Manchester United. And when he gets there, Glenn, he's a finisher. And I've always been one of those, I believe. I played in the lower leagues before I managed to make it into the Premier League. And I said, if teams spend time and go down and look lower down the tiers, there is players who I think could make the step up. Yes, they need a little bit of luck. You need a bit of fortune on your way. But if you're a goal scorer, Glenn, it's in you. You know, and if you know what to do in front of goal from 18 yards, whether you're playing on a Sunday morning with your mates or you're playing in the Premier League, not too much changes, the pressure, the noise, the expectation. But he's one goal, one goalkeeper. And Jamie Vardy has taken what he was doing in the fifth tier of football, brought it into the Premier League. And I think it's a really refreshing story and great for all the sort of journeyman playing and playing, hoping to be given a chance, because Jamie Vardy has got people thinking.
Yeah, what an example of possibility. And you mentioned it was only, if it was 5 years ago, he was in the fifth tier of English soccer. Yeah. He was 25 years of age. Many a guy would have quit the game probably at that point.
Correct.
In some ways, he was
working in a factory, I believe, Glenn. And you know, I mean, the stories are all coming out now, but it's been on record that he was saying, even at 24, 25, one day I'm going to make the Premier League and play for England. And as ever, his mates probably thought he'd had a beer too many, as we all do at certain times. And you know, he was talking out of his hat. But, you know, congratulations to the guy and to Leicester City, really. I think they've been a great story. And I think it was important for them. Everyone said, well, they've had the easy games and they've got six tough games coming up now, the first of which was Manchester United at the weekend. Well, they got a draw. They're still above Manchester United. They're still in the top four. And I know Swansea's to come and Chelsea's to come, but, you know, Chelsea are a mid-table team these days, no longer the powerhouses they were. So who knows how far Leicester can go? And they will probably at some point drop out the top four because they haven't got enough quality. But the longer the story goes, I think the better it is for football, and the more that other teams will feel, you know what, if we invest wisely, if we get the right kind of players, then we can get to that term, you know, near the top of the table as well.
Yeah, I think these are defining moments, because even in Major League Soccer, that's happened this year with the two lowest budgeted teams in the league ending up the number one and two seed in the league, New York winning the Supporter Shield, and that was the New York Red Bulls and FC Dallas, who did it through a policy of use. So I guess it's a great statement what Leicester and Vardy are doing. Can they keep it up? That will be the question. How about Arsenal? I know Arsene Wenger's getting criticized for the injuries to Alexis Sanchez. How do you see that whole situation with Arsene Wenger and playing Sanchez?
For Arsenal and Arsenal fans, I said the other day, we talk more about the treatment table than the Premier League table with Arsenal. And again, it looks like it might undermine their challenge. In a year, Glenn, when, in all honesty, the inconsistencies in the league may be an opportunity for somebody. You know, Manchester City have Manchester City days, what I call them, where they just don't quite get at the races. Chelsea have obviously had a disastrous start to the season. Elsewhere, Manchester United have got some points, but not playing that well, and you still feel that, you know, that there may be more to come. So there's an opportunity for somebody to take hold of the league this year and push on. And I thought it might be Arsenal's turn this time around. But over the last few weeks, I look at last weekend, Francis Coquelin got injured with a knee injury. It looks like he's going to be out up to 3 months. Now, that he was an important loss, and there isn't too much you can do about that one. I think at the weekend, where the criticism for Wenger comes is that he'd gone on record before the match and said that Alexis Sanchez is carrying a hamstring injury. He's in what we call the red zone, so that danger of susceptibility to picking up another injury. Yet he went and played him, and 60 minutes later, he looks like he's off. We're talking about possibly a month, a crucial month in the season, losing your most productive forward who can play in a number of positions. It's a big loss for Arsenal. It's a big blow to Arsene Wenger. With Champions League coming up against Olympiacos and some tough games if they want to stay up and around the top of the table.
You know, it's obviously possible he could override what trainers say and go and talk to the player himself and say, can you do it for me? And you know, most players are going to say yes, aren't they?
They are. But sometimes, Glenn, and I think you know the situation where sometimes a manager has to protect a player as well. Mm-hmm. You get those players who will play through anything, and sometimes you've got to hold them back. It was interesting Jurgen Klopp went the other way with Daniel Sturridge and almost publicly poked him and said, sometimes you've got to get out and play. Daniel Sturridge is probably one of those players who has to feel 100%, has to feel great in himself before he'll pull on the shirt. So you do get different characters in the dressing room, and it's important the manager knows which ones sometimes you have to protect and sometimes which ones you have to try and poke and get them out there on the football field.
He's Robbie Earle, NBC analyst, former Premier League player, also was a color analyst for the Portland Timbers. Mm. So let's talk a little bit about the Portland Timbers, because you saw him in the early days in the building of a franchise, a local owner in Merritt Paulson, and going through John Spencer as a coach to now Caleb Porter. This whole story right now, and obviously we know the furor that is and the support of fans in Portland is just remarkable. I mean, it's a remarkable thing. But how about through your eyes, where you've seen it come now to them being in an MLS Cup final?
I've seen this team come into MLS, and I think one of the problems in some respects that Portland Timbers had is that they were more known or renowned for the fan base and the Timbers army than they were what they were doing on the football pitch. And I think over the last 18 months, that's changed. I think it was something I know Caleb Porter was keen to put a team on the pitch that did justice to that and also had people talking about the football as well as the crowd. It's a fantastic organisation, I have to say. I worked for them for 2 years. And I'm not just talking about the fans or what you see on the pitch, but behind the scenes and the people who work in the offices and the staff are all football people, diehard football people who want to do the best for this club and in the area. And I think up until this point, there's been a little bit of disappointment with what they've done in terms of getting to playoffs and beyond. But I think this is the first time that the group's come together. Merritt Paulson's backed Caleb Porter when he's needed to in bringing in the right kind of players. They're a young team. They're a mobile team. They've got hot at just the right time. And I know they're away from home, but for me, would still start as favourites. And there'll be a sizable number of people from Portland, believe you me, who will be making that journey to the MLS Cup final at the weekend. But I think it was important for the organisation to get to a final, you know, and obviously they'll be doing everything they can to win. But I think it was important for the organisation to get to a final to show that they're more than just 24,000 people selling out the stadium every weekend, and they weren't giving a good enough product on the pitch. I think now we're seeing a team who are doing justice on the field and are supported in the manner that we all know.
He's Robbie Earle, NBC analyst. Last question before I let you go, Robbie, and I should have asked it a little bit earlier in this interview, but where did your big break come? Everybody has that one moment, maybe that platforms you in a professional soccer career. Where did it come for Robbie Earle?
It's really interesting, Glenn. I had sort of 6 years sort of in what I call the formative years, lower down in the English tier, and I was playing in the old second division, which is the Championship now. And there was a couple of clubs watching me. One was Wimbledon. And it was funny that we were playing away at Middlesbrough. It was wet. It was cold. There was about 5,000 people there. It wasn't a particularly good occasion. And we were down 4-0 with about 5 minutes on the clock. And it was one of those situations where a ball got played from back to front on my team. And I just, as I am, a bit crazy, a bit stubborn, chased it as much as I could, put a defender under pressure, got a break, scored a goal, made it 4-1. And it was the day the owner of Wimbledon said to me that he came to the club and asked to sign me. And it was basically, and it was really interesting that he said, if somebody with 5 minutes to go, away at Middlesbrough, no fans in the place, is still prepared to run and chase and go and make something happen. He said, I want a little bit of that in my team. And it's interesting that I see Jamie Vardy and I see that kind of thing in Jamie Vardy and the number of the Leicester fans. Listen, when it comes to you late, Glenn, it means that little bit more. You prepared to work that little bit harder and you're really hungry for the success. And it, as great as it was playing down the leagues, once you get to the top, you don't really want to leave there. So that was my kind of lucky break. Fortunately, I made the most of it and managed to have a career in the Premier League. But as I know, there's plenty of guys down there as well who, are chasing balls and hoping they get their lucky break. And that's why Jamie Vardy sort of stands for those guys. And hopefully I was one of those as well.
Robbie, listen, thank you very much for coming on and sharing all this insight. We really enjoyed it, and continue
it pleasure, Mike.
Success with you on NBC, where each and every week you're doing a wonderful job. Say hello to that guy, Robbie Musto, and that other guy. You know that other guy who used to play for the Columbus Crew.
That's right, that Tom Martino guy.
That Martino guy, yeah. Say hello to those guys for me, and listen, thanks again for coming on the program.
Well, dude, cheers, Glenn.
That's a way to wrap it up tonight. I'll tell you what, Robbie Earl there with some great commentary on a number of different things there. I love the piece there where he talks about how he got his big break, and everybody needs one. That's, I think sometimes you look back in the history of players and managers and you see where they started and where they gained experience. It is pretty remarkable. That'll do it tonight. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook, Soccer Matters, and, of course, HoustonDynamo.com for your tickets. Good night, everyone.
ESPN 97.5.